Chariot Solutions TechCast number 50, an interview with Jeremy Grelli from SpringSource on Spring's web strategies. I'm Ken Rimple. Welcome to the show. My guest today, Jeremy Grelli, is a senior software engineer at SpringSource. He's going to help us lay out the various web and rich internet APIs available to Spring developers. We discuss Spring MVC, Webflow, JavaScript, Spring Faces, and FlexBlaze DS integration. Jeremy is speaking at our Emerging Technology for the Enterprise conference on April 8th and 9th, 2010. Register now and save with the Early Bird Special. Head on over to phillyemergingtech.com. SpringSource is a Chariot Solutions partner. On to the interview. My guest today is Jeremy Grelli. He works for SpringSource. And what's your official capacity there?
My official capacity these days, I say I'm an open source developer. We have interesting new titles at VMware, so I've just kind of made up my own. In general, I'm an open source web developer working on the Spring web projects.
Great. And your background, I think I saw in the Spring One slides, was it like a rock star was the term that you had there? You're a musician, right?
Yeah. In a previous life, before I took my career quite as seriously, at least my engineering career, I was a lot more focused on being a musician. So we joke around at SpringSource a lot about getting saddled with these terms like Java rock star and things like that. So we it's very tongue in cheek, but yeah, I like to say I'm a genuine rock star, but you know,
what was your instrument, guitar?
I played guitar. I was a lead singer, in the bands that I played in. Yeah.
All right. So your JSF interest kind of predates your Webflow interest, right?
Yeah. Really JSF is, you know, I've been working with it since really 1.0. My previous company before I worked at SpringSource, it was just a very good fit for the staff that we had. They were coming from a very, you know, component-oriented style of development, but more with desktop applications, and it just was the most logical choice at the time, and that's how I got into it. And then it progressed from there. I was very heavily involved in bringing Spring into the company, and then Webflow was a very nice fit for JSF, and that's really how I got involved with, back at the time, Interface 21 and Keith Donald, who's the general lead for all of our web initiatives. Got to know him through that, and that's really how I came on board, was to bring JSF support to a new level in Webflow.
Now, so for people who don't know Spring that well or are just getting into it, you know, there's the whole Spring container and how Spring manages beans. But then there's an MVC framework, which is kind of the first framework they put together, kind of a model view controller framework. And for a number of years, it was Spring MVC and then some adapters to hook into different web frameworks like Struts and so on. But there's a whole story now really to tell with Spring Web, correct?
Very much so. Yeah. We look at it as Spring MVC is the first class kind of foundational piece for everything we do now with web initiatives. So, you know, you can use it on its own to build sort of traditional Java-based web applications with essentially what you would call an action-oriented paradigm. But especially nowadays, the focus in Spring 3.0 is enabling a RESTful foundation, really taking that concept and making it first class in Spring MVC. But it's the foundation for everything else we do. Webflow sits on top of it. Spring Blaze DS, which is our Flex integration, sits on top of it. But they all use the same foundation of Spring MVC.
You released Spring 3.0. You mentioned the RESTful support in Spring 3.0. You know, what are some of the major, I guess, differences for a Spring developer going into web development under Spring MVC on 3?
So the main thing is we really emphasize the model that we introduced, I guess it was around Spring 2.5, this annotated controller model where you just write, controller classes and you use Java 5 annotations to say, you know, okay, this class is a controller. You know, this method maps to, you know, a particular URL, and it's all a very simple annotation-based model. Whereas in previous generations of Spring MVC, everything was this hierarchy of classes that you had to extend. We really wanted to kind of get rid of that and make things more flexible. And so that annotation-based model was something we introduced in Spring 2.5. And now Spring 3.0 is really really making that model just more mature and aligning it with the RESTful concepts. So some of the things we've added are, you know, additional capabilities for the URL mapping and so forth in the annotations, where you know, you can actually make the URL or part of the URL, different paths in the URL, actual data as input into your handler method. So really the concept of URI templates is what is built in now, and it's something that's very central in REST, just the idea to have a very meaningful URL pointing to as kind of an identifier for a resource. So we structure everything now around the idea of exposing resources. And so the general approach that we see people having success with is taking a controller, a Spring MVC controller, and mapping that to a particular resource. And it's a very nice logical way to structure a web application without having to, just about everything you need to do with just simple POJOs now.
You know, Webflow is kind of a controller mechanism inside of Spring Web MVC, kind of your stateful flow through an application kind of thing. Now, Webflow is coming up on a 3.0 release. Is that correct?
We're really just getting started on that. We've been essentially, everything else has kind of been waiting for Spring 3.0 to get finished before we really ramp up on the kind of the next generation of the other web projects. So Spring 3.0 has finally come out in December. So now that that's out, we'll be building, kind of the next generation of these other projects alongside it. There's actually some things that we want to get into a Spring 3.1 web-related, some things we just didn't have time to get into Spring 3.0 that are actually fairly important for some of these other projects like Webflow to build on. So Webflow 3.0 development will be happening in conjunction with the Spring 3.1 effort, which is going to be a much shorter time frame than what it took for Spring 3.0.
So now I know there's other standards coming into the mix. There's the whole Java Bean validation standard. What is that, 3.10, or I forget the number. But
yeah, I forget myself, yeah.
3.0-something.
3.03, I think.
That's the one.
3.03.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got it. So are you going to be following that as well? So if someone creates a bean, maybe a command object, and puts the, like, at not null or at length or something like that in there, is Spring going to respond to those?
Yeah, we actually do that now. That's built now into Spring MVC. Where you can actually, if you have those annotations on your model object, and you have that model object as basically as input to your controller method, you can just mark, I believe the annotation is at valid, and that will automatically invoke the JSR 303 bean validation routines on it. And of course, in traditional Spring fashion, all of the kind of the infrastructure for the bean validation can be actually bootstrapped, inside of the Spring container using the traditional configuration mechanisms. So yeah, we have full support for 303 bean validation right now.
Okay. Now, so let's get into Webflow a little bit. So if you had to describe Webflow to somebody who hasn't used it before, it's like a web state machine, the way I explain it to people. But, what would be your take?
Exactly. It's for use cases where you really needs state in, when building a web application. And mostly, the sweet spot is something that's like a multi-step process of interaction with the user. Whether it be a wizard-style thing where they have to go through multiple pages and multiple views to complete some process, or if it's even, these days with AJAX, that's a very useful model to have some state on the server so that you can load a very rich page, but have repeated interactions within that page that just are manipulating the same model, but using AJAX calls in the background. So it's kind of a mix of both, but it essentially, yeah, it's a way to have directed guided navigation through the application. It's a very event driven style of programming where everything that every request back to the server is essentially turned into a Webflow event. And it's just a nice declarative language. It's in XML, the flows that you write, but it's a nice declarative style. You really don't write these days with Webflow 2, its current incarnation. The focus is really more on writing expressions that actually invoke your business logic than it is on writing, you know, a lot of XML. We really simplified the language quite a bit in 2.0 and made expression language a first-class concept and that you can get a lot done with. So the benefits are it gives you this nice language for directing a user through your application. It's also a very productive tool to work with. This is something I emphasize a lot to especially JSF developers where it's a very nice fit. The flow definition language, the XML flows, are dynamic. They can actually, as you're developing it and as you're editing the flow, you can just hit refresh in your browser and it will reload the flow and actually recalculate things. So it's a very nice iterative style of development, more what a developer is used to if they've got like a traditional web development background. So it's a really nice, productive way of building stateful applications.
Right. And I think if you're using JSF, you're kind of used to components that have events. So it's a nice fit from there. And a lot of people don't really even know that you can do JSF and what the options are for JSF inside of Webflow. So can you talk a little bit about what those options are?
Absolutely. So in the 2.0 timeframe, we added this module to Webflow called Spring Faces. And what that essentially is the new integration between Webflow and JSF. And Webflow is a very nice fit for JSF because they're both stateful paradigms. So with JSF, you know, you render a page and then you have this stateful component model in the background. And it's a very common thing, especially with the AJAX libraries that are around in JSF these days, to have fine-grained events on the page. They're just continually updating this model. So since you have this stateful components, but also a stateful object model provided by Webflow, it's a very nice fit together. But Spring Faces essentially brings JSF into the Webflow kind of request processing lifecycle. So we actually drive JSF from within Webflow when you use Spring Faces. So we execute the JSF lifecycle at the proper points within the Webflow execution. We do it essentially to the letter of the spec. So, you know, if you're familiar with JSF and you've been using it for a while and you know the JSF lifecycle, everything continues to work the way you would expect, but you get these extra execution points that Webflow gives you that JSF does not traditionally give you, things like being able to preload a model when you first come into a view, or at various execution points, like, you know, being able to execute things as you leave a view or as you, you know, handle a certain event to execute some business logic. So it's a nice addition on top of the traditional JSF model. And it's really quite a nice fit. And that's really these days is what we consider our first class solution. If you are using JSF, we really think this makes JSF a bit easier to use. And it's what we recommend if you're doing JSF with Spring. Essentially, it kind of replaces the traditional managed bean model in JSF. If you really take it to its extreme and you use it kind of the way that we think is the most productive, you use Webflow essentially to drive every interaction in the JSF application.
Now, as JSF 2 comes out, I know that JSF 2 was all about simplifying JSF, basically.
Absolutely.
You know, like not needing to have a faces config and injecting all your beans into it just basically annotate your beans and they're there. But you're doing the same thing from, you know, the Spring Faces project. What's the interaction going to be with JSF 2.0?
So JSF 2 offers some interesting additional features. And first, you know, it should just slot right in and continue to work, you know, with the model we've been advocating with using Webflow. And that should continue to be a nice fit. And we're actually thinking with Webflow 3.0 to kind of eliminate some complexity and to really embrace the features that have been added to JSF 2 that will actually set JSF 2.0 as a baseline in Webflow 3 to take advantage of those features without having to support so many legacy options. And then we can really kind of push JSF 2 to its extreme. So what JSF 2 really, I think, is going to open up is the possibility to, you know, potentially to have more of a mixed interaction where you can do some things in a stateless way if needed and other things in a stateful way. So that's kind of our thinking at the moment. We're still exploring that. But the other thing, really, that the big, I think the killer feature of JSF 2.0 is the new style of developing components where you can develop them without having to write a ton of Java artifacts as you had to in the JSF 1 days. You can develop some pretty advanced complex components just using facelets templating. And as I was saying about the Webflow execution language, it's very declarative. It's got that nice, you know, kind of very web way of working, that iterative style where you can kind of make some changes to your component and refresh and things just continue to work. So we think the two are a very nice fit together. You can really start to develop in a nice iterative style with the two driving everything. So we think Webflow continues to fit in there. At the same time, we think, yeah, there's been some debate actually on the JSF expert group saying, well, what should we be recommending to users in terms of a managed bean model? Because there is this annotated managed bean model still in JSF itself that says, you know, if you don't have Spring or if you aren't using some of the newer things from EE6 like CDI, context and dependency injection, you know, then JSF still has this its own annotated model for beans. But I think the general consensus on the expert group is really to recommend that people use something like Spring or like CDI if they want to go the pure EE6 route. So that becomes interesting because there's a bit of overlap between the two and starting to, you know, make, but there's a bit of overlap, and but they also complement each other nicely. They both take very similar approaches. But essentially what we have is I think you can have this nice mixed model of using Webflow for some things, but also still just having annotated Spring beans to actually act as the managed beans. And that'll slot in very nicely as well. So it's really there's a lot of ground for us to explore there in JSF 2 and to really push things and see what the best practice is going to become. I think there's a lot of open territory there.
You know, some people are using things like Rich Faces for Ajax, and you just mentioned that Spring Faces also can do some of that as well.
Yes.
So if you wanted to install like another facelets, or I shouldn't even say that, another component library, can you easily add those and still use Spring Faces as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Spring Faces has some components, but it's just a few very simple ones. Really, we wrote them just to kind of prove the model that we have for handling AJAX requests, but it's very easy to slot in. And in fact, I think a majority of our users slot in something else. I think the two most popular ones I've seen are Rich Faces and Ice Faces seem to be the dominant libraries that we see used with Webflow. But the Spring Faces integration just allows that to continue to work
with the existing model. So we were very diligent about that in developing Spring Faces to make sure that these common extension points of JSF just continue to work. So plugging in different component libraries, plugging in, you know, more advanced things like face listeners or, and so forth that you're used to, these traditional JSF extension points. We wanted to make sure that those just continue to function as you're used to.
Mm-hmm. Now, another piece of the puzzle here is Spring JavaScript. Tell us what that project is. I mean, the first time I saw it was actually when I was kicking the tires on Roo. And Spring Roo was using Spring JavaScript for its validation. So what's Spring JavaScript?
So essentially, we wanted to give MVC users who are not necessarily using JSF, they're just using traditional JSP, we wanted to give them really a jumping off point to getting into really using these more modern, rich JavaScript libraries. Things like Dojo and jQuery are really the kind of the most popular ones out there. There's other really nice ones like ext.js, YUI from Yahoo. So we really just Spring JavaScript was originally meant to just be this nice introduction to those libraries. We actually it's meant to be an abstraction, a level above the libraries, where it provides some extra utility functions, for certain things. One thing we do, we provide some server-side support as well that allows you to do partial rendering of an existing page. So if you've got an existing JSP page and you've got it broken up into the technology we use is tiles, if you've got it broken up into different tiles, sections, different tiles, templates, you can actually on the server side say, okay, I just want to render this particular piece in response to this AJAX request, and render back that fragment. And then Spring JavaScript, uses the underlying library. And in our case, we distribute Dojo currently and build on top of it. So it handles that partial request coming back, automatically inserts it into your page and so forth. But really what we meant it to be is this way for Spring developers to just get these advanced libraries into their page very easily and to start integrating with them. And we've been actually rethinking this a bit lately, how we approach this. Right now it's a module of Webflow, as Spring Faces is. It's something that's distributed with the Webflow project. We've been thinking, do we make this its own project? What's the future of Spring JavaScript? And we've been realizing, you mentioned Spring Roo, and that's actually been the catalyst for us thinking about how we approach this in a different way, where I think the real thing we want to do is get Java users really embracing these advanced JavaScript technologies, and learning to use them effectively. And I think some of the approach we've taken in the past doesn't quite achieve that the way we wanted it to, where it doesn't get users to embrace, say, the Dojo API or the jQuery API. And that's really what we ultimately want. So we're rethinking how that's going to work. And Spring Roo really provides this this catalyst for us to be able to introspect things from a different perspective and be able to plug these different libraries in a nicer way than what we originally imagined with Spring JavaScript. So this is going to evolve a bit, and the things that are useful currently in Spring JavaScript, like the partial fragment rendering, and the client-side handling of that, they'll find a home. We're trying to figure out exactly where, but I think what you're going to see moving forward is us pushing a lot of the ideas we had for Spring JavaScript and pushing those into Roo add-ons. So you can have like a pure Dojo add-on for Roo or a pure jQuery add-on, and make those really easy to plug in and take advantage of. So Spring JavaScript has kind of had this mixed mission where it tries to do a lot of different things, but it doesn't, but it's been a very lightweight kind of layer. And you know, I think its biggest benefit has just been getting Dojo into the hands of our users very easily. It's like a very easy way for them to consume it. But I think that we have other facilities for doing that now with Roo. And I think that's where this will be going in the future. So really, you know, so right now Spring Roo actually generates, when you do the full scaffolding, it generates code using Spring JavaScript to do the client-side validation. You know, these nice, richer form widgets that have, you know, tooltips and things built in. And those are actually under the covers. Those are actually Dojo widgets. So I think what you'll actually see us doing in the future is just generating the pure Dojo code instead, and you know, and then having an option where you can say, well, I'm not using Dojo, I want to use jQuery, I want to use ext.js, and people could in theory come in and you know, swap in a different Roo add-on to get that functionality. So, you know, that's really where we see this going in the future.
So the reason we have you coming down to Philly ETE actually in April is the Spring Blaze DS integration project you're working on. And for those who don't know what Blaze DS is, it's a remoting library for Flex, for Java clients, or Java servers rather, in Flex. So Jeremy, you've been working on an integration library from Spring Source's perspective to make that easy to use. So why don't we talk a little bit about Spring Blaze DS?
Yes, exactly. So that's been my really my main focus for the last year or so, is the Spring Blaze DS integration library. It's been around, you know, we put the first milestones out in the beginning of last year. It went 1.0 in around July. And essentially it's our collaboration with Adobe to make Blaze DS easier to use in a Spring environment. So you could plug a Java backend in to Blaze DS, you know, to basically to make your Flex client talk to a Spring backend. You could do that before, but it wasn't as easy as we would like. It wasn't really kind of what a Spring developer is used to. You had to write a lot of extra XML configuration that's in a dialect specific to Blaze DS. You had to have things, you know, kind of make sure that these identifiers matched up between that XML and your Spring XML. And it was kind of a lot of extra hoops to jump through. So what we do in Spring Blaze DS integration, Blaze DS has this very nice central piece called a message broker that actually handles all the incoming, essentially it's really just HTTP messages, but encoded as, Adobe's binary format called AMF, that is a nice efficient format for transferring between ActionScript, you know, over the wire, kind of serialized ActionScript over the wire to other languages. And Blaze DS specifically handles the AMF serialization and deserialization between Java. So that message broker is kind of that central piece. And we essentially take that and we bootstrap that now inside of Spring. And once we had that level of integration, it really opened up all these different things that we could do, because now this is a Spring-managed object. So we eliminate, I would say, 80% of the Blaze DS XML that you had to write before. It now just becomes, you know, very simple configuration elements in your existing Spring configuration. So, for example, if you've got a Spring Bean that you want to expose to your Flex client, you just add a simple, you know, if it's defined in XML, you add just one extra line of XML using a schema-specific element for Spring Blaze DS. Or if you have an annotated Spring service, you just add an at remoting destination annotation to it, and it's automatically exposed then to your Flex client for this RPC style of remoting. And then really what I think one of the killer features of Blaze DS is that it also does push style messaging, where more of an asynchronous style of interaction between the client and server. So this is a really nice fit with things like with JMS, of course, is the traditional messaging paradigm on the Java server side, but also I think kind of the next generation we see
is use of a project like Spring Integration in this paradigm, where Spring Integration can kind of be this this central hub for handling the incoming messages and routing them to all sorts of different places. You can have really interesting logic on any incoming messages, and then pushing them back out. So we have support for using both, plugging in both a traditional Spring JMS configuration or Spring Integration, and that integrates really tightly with the BlazeDS push mechanisms, so that you can actually, push a message from the server back out to a connected a Flex client who's actually, interested in this particular destination and has subscribed to it. So we've done some really kind of fun demos with that. Things like, this chat application where you can actually have a, private chat with the user, and then, say for example, the user goes offline, and Spring Integration has this, in just a very few simple lines of code, this routing logic to say, oh, that user went offline, so let's send them a, a direct Twitter message instead, So really some just interesting things you can do that I think fit really well in this kind of the way the web is moving to this, very event-driven paradigm. So
now, are you going to have sample projects in Spring Source Tool Suite to generate those things down the road?
Yeah, that's the idea. We're looking at that, doing actually a number of different things. We'll have a simple template in Spring Source Tool Suite. We're also working with Adobe to make sure that that Flash Builder, which is what they're calling the new version of Flex Builder.
Right, version 4, yeah.
For Flash Builder 4, we're going to make sure that's really easy to get into Spring Source Tool Suite as a plugin and make sure all of that functionality just works. And in fact, there's some interesting tutorials that some of their guys have posted recently where you can actually use Flash Builder right now to actually introspect your Spring BlazeDS destinations, and it'll generate a lot of kind of the boilerplate action script and MXML code for you for interacting with them. But we're going to continue to make sure that story it works really well. But the other thing I'm working on for the next version of Spring BlazeDS is a Roo plugin as well, a Roo add-on rather, where we'll actually, from a Java model, we'll generate the right kind of mirrored action script objects and potentially even, full scaffolding sort of UI the way we do with just a Spring MVC application right now.
That'd be fantastic.
So that'll be another way to really, if nothing else, even if you didn't use the scaffolding, the thing I love about Spring Roo is it's a really great way to just get a Spring project set up. Even if you don't go for the full, scaffolding features of the web application, just getting all the things that you continually do every time you start a new Spring project, pulling in persistence, pulling in the right Maven configuration, and in this case, pulling in the right files to make BlazeDS happy, it just makes that so quick to get up and running with. So I'm pretty excited about that, getting that going. We've already been working on it, and it's looking pretty nice.
Yeah, Roo's my Spring Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that tool. It's great.
Yeah.
Now, on the other side, on the dynamic programming side with Grails, I know Grails had a BlazeDS plugin. It's a little bit long in the tooth. I know that Graham Rocher was talking about redoing it. Are you guys working on that with him?
Yeah, absolutely. He had, I think his priority was getting the latest release of Grails out. But now that that's out, we're talking about, he wants to give some love to some of those plugins. And he had actually done a prototype in a way of actually a Grails plugin that actually uses Spring BlazeDS under the covers and takes advantage of that functionality. One of the headaches that people do run into with BlazeDS, if you're using Hibernate on the back end and trying to just send Hibernate objects over the wire, it doesn't work as transparently as one would hope, because BlazeDS does essentially touch everything in the particular object you try and send. So if you have Hibernate collections that have not been initialized, it'll initialize those, and so you end up kind of with the something that can be rather inefficient. So, and of course, Grails using Hibernate on the back end that can potentially cause a problem. So we're looking for a solution to that, some additional support within Spring BlazeDS that will, you know, make sure that if you haven't initialized something, that it remains uninitialized when it before it gets serialized over the wire into the AMF format. So basically, for the Grails plugin to be completed and really effective, and really same thing for the Rue plugin, we're going to have to add that functionality to Spring BlazeDS. But that's definitely something we're working on in the very near future.
Well, that explains a lot, because I know we've all been looking at it going, oh, I can't wait to get my hands on this. And I even wired together my own little Grails app with just installing Spring BlazeDS integration. I'm like, oh, that kind of works. But then I thought, how would I turn that into a plugin? And then I'd stop.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait, I don't work for these guys, and I would love it to do, and I have 50 things to do. So, yeah. Now I can understand some of the complexities.
Yeah, I mean, the solutions out there right now, you know, people, I think the people building really big applications with BlazeDS to this point have been using more of a DTO pattern to avoid those problems, but
yeah,
we'd like to give a nice solution that doesn't require that. So
great. All right. So you're going to talk about BlazeDS there. You're going to talk about setting up a Spring Blaze project.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to the talk. And anything you're doing between now and then you want to promote or talk about?
The main thing I'm going to be working on between now and then is this next version of Spring BlazeDS. So I'm going to be pretty heads down for the next few months working on that. We're working on basically the next major version of it. It's going to include one thing we haven't done so far is integration with the features that are specific to Lifecycle DS, which is, you know, Adobe's commercial product that builds on top of BlazeDS. It's really just when you get into the guts of it, it's really just an additional module on top of the same code. So we are going to add support in our open source project to support that, what they call the data management service. For the people that do choose to use that. So we're going to have integration with that. We're going to have integration with some of their new features potentially as well. They've got and this does, it overlaps with Rue a little bit, but I think it's something that when you talk about two different audiences, you know, I think the Rue approach appeals very much to our traditional Spring audience, you know, a Java developer, but maybe somebody who's coming more from an Adobe background likes to use the Adobe tools. And so they've got these interesting code generation features in the next version of Flash Builder that depends on this new version of Lifecycle DS. And so we want to make sure that we can integrate with that, and, you know, that they potentially could generate, you know, proper Spring artifacts if they need to. So that's, you know, so lots of things coming still with that project down the pipe, as well as, you know, keep an eye out for Spring 3.1 and things like that, the things that are going to kick into gear here very soon. So,
all right. Well, Jeremy Grelli, thanks so much for spending the time today on the TechCast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
To hear more of our podcasts, including our new developer news show, subscribe today at techcast.chariotsolutions.com. Our theme music is Free Theme Number 3, also Free Theme Number 4, from podcastthemes.com. Leave us feedback. Send us your emails at techcastfeedback@chariotsolutions.com, or just leave us a message using the TechCast hashtag on Twitter. For more information on Chariot Solutions in the education, mentoring, and development services, visit www.chariotsolutions.com. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rempel.